Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and for some breaking news breakdown material, joined, of course, by Dan, sporting one of his fancy T-shirts that he sold to the Stars Academy. Dan, welcome.
Hi, it's good to be here. You know, I took a break from my holiday spend and all that to the Stars money to come record.
Absolutely. And those T-shirts, Dan, UFOs are real. Back in stock, I believe, at To The Stars, yeah?
I think they are, yeah. Right, I'm not plugging it. They don't give me extra for plugging it, so.
There you go. Oh, you don't get any extra? I'll delete that out then. That's fine. So I've got the design now. That's it. Originally, we planned this last week, Dan, with some bits and pieces to talk through. Probably went out the window a little bit with Skywatcher Part being launched last night. And I've got loads of stuff to talk through on that. So we're going to kick off with a little chat around the context and build up to Skywatcher Part 2 coming out. What is Skywatcher Part 2? I hear some people asking, Dan, metaphorically. Skywatcher, Jake Barber and Co., which is a full title, I believe, now I keep saying that. They are an organization that basically is set up, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, they plan to summon via multiple methods UAP, UFOs, craft, objects, entities, whatever they may be, out in a particular area where they're based currently. I believe there's been two now, and study, collect data, and try and work out what this particular phenomenon is. Jake Barber came out as a helicopter pilot who picked up multiple shaped UAP, UFOs back through his military career. And he's now got this organization up and running. Looks like a lot of stuff's been happening in the background for some time. Fast forward, things have happened and moved pretty quickly with this. We are now in early April, and we've had 2 episodes, and that's probably worth a discussion, of what Skywatcher is and what they're looking to do, the second of which was released last night. The first one was a little bit of a here, who we are, what we want to do, and look very stylish, very slick. And then the second episode gets into, here are some of our initial results, and that's what we're going to get to talking about. Is that right? Is that where you are with it?
I think it's a good summary. They should just cut that little bit out and put it on their website. Like, who are we? And it'll just be you, some of them up.
Who's this guy with the Scottish accent really fueling everyone? So last week on Ross Coulthart's Reality Check show, he had Jake Barber and Matthew Pines both on the show, giving a bit of a preamble of what to expect with Skywatcher Part 2. So we'll just run through some notes, Dan, and then we'll get to what actually happened in Skywatcher Part 2, because I think it's important, you mentioned before we hit record, let's set up what they were kind of saying ahead of time and what we actually saw, what matches up and what might still be coming, and what might we have some questions around, some issues with. And then I've got a whole load of listener feedback, expectations, questions to go through as well as some other news bits and pieces too. So basically, by the end of the year, they have a dog whistle and a psionics kit. So let me start here then, Dan, right? I hope this is a good place to start. What they've claimed is the Skywatcher group have two methods to contact these things, which are still relatively vague, but one is mechanical and one is more mental slash using the human mind. The mechanical, they're calling it a dog whistle. So basically they have a piece of equipment, and all they've said so far is when they turn it on, whatever that equipment is, they have said it works 100% of the time, including daylight, at summoning a variety of different objects into the
sky. And that's a quote directly from Skywatcher as well. That's multiple what they've times. Said.
Yeah, they are very confident. And Jake Barber, and jump to the end of my notes on this section. I think Jake Barber spoke really well in this piece, and so did Matthew Pines. They aren't difficult to listen to, and they aren't mincing their words. They're pretty clear in what they've said. This works 100% of the time.
Not 100% of the time. Some of the time. It was just 100% of the time, which is a big claim to make. But, this is what they're setting up. These were the words. This is the expectations people went into Skywatcher Part 2 with. Jake also said that the footage is less sensational than you would expect, which I can respect saying that. Taking the hype down a little bit. He went into how hard they are to capture because, you know, these things show up sporadically in the air. They move at high speeds. And so their servos and their equipment have to move real fast to kind of capture these things. So, my expectation when I wrote it, and this was written before Part 2 came out, was that we basically see blurry footage, tiny specks in the distance. That was where my expectations were when I watched this.
Yeah, so all these notes, that's a good point, Dan. All these notes are kind of made from before when Part 2 was launched, just off the back of the Need to Know episode. So we've got this dog whistle piece of equipment. We don't know exactly what it is or how it works yet. They're playing those cards close to their chest. And the second way to summon these things is psionics, as we heard. We've also got some new terminology for that we'll get to. Let's tell you now. So the electrical mechanical signaling is the dog whistle. And the new term for psionics, neuro-meditative interaction. It doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah, it does not roll off the tongue. But I can respect their point. You know, they were saying psionics is kind of full of that baggage of people thinking about psychics and mediums and channelers
about Power Rangers,
and stuff like that.
Like, you know,
yeah. So I can respect kind of using, you know, more specific terms in this particular show, Reality Check. Jake said it more reflects what the psionic assets are there to do anyway.
Yeah.
So that's supposedly the new term that they're using for them.
So Arrow have visited, very early on in the piece, they mentioned Arrow has visited the range. Some people had an issue with that. Some people don't. I personally don't, because we're not talking Sean Kirkpatrick and whatnot. I appreciate that stigma is very much, that stank, as some people may say, is still on the Arrow organization. I can take it or leave it. It doesn't really make a difference to me. I'm glad they have been, because they should be interested in this. You would think if you were an organization investigating potential UAP, UFO incidents, sightings, data collection, then if you've got people literally doing that right now, live, in real time, then why wouldn't you go? Of course you would. So it makes sense they go. I've got no issue with that, Dan. Arrow visiting.
It's with all these things, I always say it's better to watch these things and be informed about it. And my frustration with Skywatcher mostly comes from the fact that I want to be more informed about what they're doing. So I want Arrow in on this to be informed about these methods and the results and things like that, so that they can include them in the reports going forward.
Very quick side step already. Plenty of those, I'm sure, in this recording. Ross Coulthard alluding that the drones that were seen over New Jersey and such were potentially holograms or NHI still. I still see people going back and forward on this. Marek von Rennenkamp in the Skywatcher 2 piece as well mentions the drone situation in New Jersey. And again, seems quite comfortable or confident there was an NHI aspect to it. I still sit on the side of I don't see that. Who was it in one of the pieces said that they didn't see that? I've got it on the notes at some point. Said that they felt they were largely misidentified aircraft.
That was Marek.
Was it Matic? Sorry.
Yeah. He brought them up and he said, you know, and most people that were looking at those objects in the sky, who know what's in the sky, could see that they were very obviously planes and things like that, which caught me off guard. And we'll get to it, but it caught me off guard because
it was a bit out of place. But just they mentioned it in Reality Check as well. And Ross is still, and I genuinely don't believe Ross is peddling something sensational for the sake of it. He's clearly got sources who tell him certain things. I've still not seen, though, the evidence to suggest otherwise. But it was just a little sidebar that kind of came up. So we've got, folks, this dog whistle, and we've got the psionics. I've got a note straight away, Dan. Have I mistook this? Did I look too much into those initial claims? Things seem further behind than initially may have been put across when Jake Barber came forward in early January. I got the impression from the initial interviews that this stuff was stuff they could do. They were talking very confidently about the summoning as if it was, we're good with this. And now it seems perhaps they're walking that back. Perhaps, but that may not be a bad thing. And I've got notes about that. But what's your take on that? Is that where you were?
I also made a similar note. I completely agree. If they'd have started like this, it's a bit more tepid, isn't it? Kind of like, we think we can do this. We're going to be testing it. We're going to be producing data and coming out with peer-reviewed kind of studies. But they didn't. The tease was from, Ross said that all hell was going to break loose because of what they'd be releasing with Skywatcher. And Jake, in those segments, the term used was that they have unequivocal proof that we're not alone. And now we're back to, in this, Jake says, it's not aliens. We don't know what it is. And it's like, we're moving back now.
Okay, so is that deliberate, though? And is that a sensible way to go about this? So I'm trying to think sensibly and logically here. If a small group of those were like, we can do this, this works, and it's almost a little bit of a shit, we've got something big here. Do you then have other folks get on board, which you need, scientists, academics and whatnot, and there are some folks we'll get to, like James Fowler, Gary Nolan's involved. Have they perhaps went, look, we know you are this far ahead, but it's very rough. What you need to do is publicly take a step back and set things up properly. You know, like if you made a movie, Dan, like a small budget and it done really well at a film festival and got picked up, but a film company went, look, there's like a $50 million or $100 million budget now. Go make your movie, but tweak it, refine it, make it better quality. People, you'll get a bigger audience. Is that perhaps what's going to happen here, where it makes sense to walk things back publicly and almost go, okay, step one, step two, and not start at step seven?
Yeah, I think so. In Reality Check, Jake literally says that they're done with kind of anecdotes and moving towards scientific discovery and data. And I think that reset button was definitely hit, it seems. Releasing those early bits of footage where people found, one of the things that they said was anomalous was a bird, for example. We need the scientific element in there to kind of get rid of stuff like that. And it's really good. It's a positive for me to kind of downplay it, take a breath, take a step back and do that step one, step two, step three. And not long after this, and definitely in this episode as well, they were talking about a framework that they were going to release, which is kind of talking about step one, step two, step three. And step one was kind of preliminary observations. Step two was structured data collection. Step three was analysis and hypothesis testing. Step four was independent verification and peer review. Five was public disclosure and review. And six was full disclosure and integration. So that, I think that's helpful, not just from their perspective, but also it lets us, when we're looking in, kind of go, okay, where are we in the journey right now? Yeah. Should I be screaming this from the rooftops, or are we kind of tentative,
Yeah, it stops a lot of the what's going on, what are you doing? And I get they can't be completely transparent and there are things they may be doing or using certain methods they're trying to protect. We don't know that the dog whistle isn't some kind of piece of nuclear material, which is highly sensitive, that they, and we'll get to discussing that kind of stuff. We don't know that, but there are reasons they are keeping certain things to themselves. But as much as they can be transparent, that would be great. Because again, looking at the context of the whole piece still, people had an issue with this episodic format. Like loads of folks, Discord, you know, on socials, were calling it Skywatcher Ranch, you know, disparagingly, because they're like, oh, here we go. They want a TV show. They want to be famous. They want to do this. Still right now, I don't believe that's the case. I don't know what you think, but I get why some folks look and go, oh, here we go. They're just wanting to make another TV show.
Yeah, I can understand both sides of it. For me, this doesn't, it's very different format-wise to Skinwalker Ranch, you know, where you kind of have those ad breaks and the recaps, and it almost feels like you get 5 minutes of new footage per episode there. Whereas both episodes of Skywatcher have been interesting to watch, no matter what you think of them. You know, I would want to add more, not you know, take stuff away from it and put it on TV and stuff like that. I think YouTube is a really good platform for them because it means that they can't be dictated by how long the episodes are going to be and how many ad breaks you need and so on and so forth. They can just do what they need to do. So whilst I'm on the fence about, you know, the results, and we'll get to that, I'm enjoying how they're doing it, you know?
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
They've said episode 3, and again, this is on both Skywatcher Part 2 and Reality Check, will be more focused on neuro-meditative summoning. So again, people using their mind to summon these craft. They mentioned that they have an oath. It sounds quite spiritual. There was a whole conversation Jake Barber had here around spirituality. It got very religious sounding in places. I don't think that's surprising if you've listened to Jake Barber's original interview and what happened. There's talk, Dan, of, and this is right up your street, the whole being pure of heart. When they go on, they have to almost have like a...
What is that on my street?
Just all that kind of nicey, you know, the anti-Stephen Greer. Greer element of the phenomenon in a way. But you know, like, I could imagine you there burning sage at the start of the day, and then at the end
I
of the day...
I literally burned sage at Skinwalker Ranch, so fine, I'll take that.
Right, yeah, exactly, right. I know you've done some shit like that. But you know, like, setting things up in a way where you're allowing like a pureness and a good energy and positivity, and then at the end of the day, they can almost thank everything and set things down. And there is that religious aspect to this, which may or may not be for some people. I'm not a religious guy, but maybe, again, it goes down that whole route of, is there a religious element to this? Are there things that tie in? What I'm finding in all of this, and I'll come back to this as well, Dan, is no matter where you fall in the UFO topic, what your narrative agenda, your favorite people are, whether you're a Greer guy, an Elizondo girl, you like Saul, you like Billy Carson, you're Cody Good, any of, I'm trying to get the range of people involved in this topic over the decades, right? There seems to be kind of something for everyone within this, elements of all those different conversations, which right now I'm thinking is a good thing. Yeah, like, where are you on that? You nodded along, so yeah. I'm taking you agree.
I mean, they're on-ramps to the subject, you know, and we've spoken before about Greer and how I started, you know, probably one of the first things I watched on Netflix was a Stephen Greer documentary, and it kind of pulled me in a bit. And my feelings on him changed over the years, but it still kind of pulled me down into that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. And the more people we have talking about this and studying this and stuff like that, the better. So we need all the on-ramps we can get, I think.
My last note on the Reality Check show, Dan, is they mentioned that they will be publishing all of this for scientific critique. I've made a note here, and I like that. I think this is a good on-ramp to the discussion. On-ramp, there we go. I think it's important they pass the social media eye test, which is where so many of these things fall down. How often does piece of material or a new piece of testimony, a video, whatever it may be, get talked about for so long there becomes a myth and a lore around it. It gets released online, and within minutes people have got location, date, time, personnel involved, and they can tell you this is what happened, it's not this, it's not this, it's a balloon, or it's a bird, or it's a testing of this, and immediately it's taken down. So I do put stock, as much as it's the Wild West, in social media folks running their initial eye over things. You know, any number of people, John Greenwald, I like John, I don't always agree with him, but he can be really good for stuff like that as well, especially with the audience he has. There's any number of folks online that people may look at as, oh, they're just debunkers, but some of them actually are really good with this stuff. Maybe people might not like their tone or how they debunk or how they go about certain things, but I get some of their frustrations, but it can be really good to go, actually, yeah, they're totally right. That's what this is. It's not a UFO. So for me, the social media eye test is really important.
Yeah, it's crowdsourcing, isn't it? We had it when Lou Elizondo had a picture in his presentation that turned out to just be like a chandelier reflection in a window. And yeah, within a half hour of social media finding out, people had found where it was, you know, the exact room that it would have been taken from to see in that way and stuff like that. And it was impressive. And I agree, you know, crowdsourcing is really good. And it's gotten to a point for me where I'm kind of like, you know what? I don't like mixed tone, but he'd probably be pretty good to have out on these excursions with Skywatcher to kind of take the tack that he does and to get rid of those prosaic possibilities, because then we get rid of that kind of belief in what we're doing. As much as we talked about, you know, what we were saying about Sage a second ago, you know, there is an aspect of this where intention seems to matter. And Stephen Gree has been pushing that with his CE5 stuff for years. But if we're going to study it, then we need to study that aspect as well. But Jake in Reality Check literally says the last thing any of us want is to look like fools. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, then you need to address everything. And Mick and John and everyone like that, they have so many followers that if you can convince them, you can convince all those people that kind of take that same tact. So I say include them, take them out on these excursions, get them involved in kind of writing these papers and things like that. And I think people would be in for some really interesting results if they included them. They're kind of like our resident skeptics, right?
Yeah. Did you have anything else from the Reality Check episode you wanted to mention just before we go into?
Oh, just they set some expectations in terms of the video footage we were going to be seeing. So in this episode, they said that we'd be seeing a Tic Tac video of the Tic Tac coming from 80,000 feet and also a jellyfish. And they said that it's literally like a jellyfish, electrical surges going up and down the arms, not the same as we've seen before, a mushroom head, but with arms that retract. And then Jake said, this thing looks more like an aquatic creature. It's like purple, maroon, metallic with a mushroom head that contracts and extends and retracts its tentacles. And I thought that was interesting because Sarah Gamm said that jellyfish had video that Corbell released had an aquatic life kind of resolution to it. And I was like, well, yeah, maybe, but unless you're going to define the aquatic life, it could be, you know, easy aquatic life, you know? And that kind of played into that for me. So I wanted to be sure to include that. There was also a little bit kind of late on where Jake said that there were four pillars for being involved in Skywatcher. And I feel that this is important to highlight just because it speaks to something that makes people skeptical about this effort. He said that the four pillars are what we're doing is legal, what we're doing is safe, what we're doing is fun, and what we're doing is profitable. And that's the word that kind of gets people's back up, I think. He made the case that, you know, you can't work full time on this without funding. So you're looking at private partnerships and you're not asking the audience on YouTube for money to do this or whatever. But I think it's fair to highlight that this is something that they want to make money off.
Do they want to or need to?
Bit of A, bit of B.
Like, again, so,
they need money to do it. You know, and it's expensive. You can see in the episodes, you know, it's a high level of production. You need the camera people. You need to put them up in hotels, pay for flights, pay for food, buy the equipment. You know, it is an expensive endeavor. But in doing so, they might make a little bit of profit and be able to buy. Someone pointed out that in the episode, most people are wearing $400 sunglasses. And, you know, fair to point it out. I'm not against someone being able to treat themselves if they're putting themselves out there and doing the work and doing the effort. But I think it's important to highlight and just speak to it at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. Again, I'll give them the benefit as well that they can't just do things ad hoc either of, okay, we're in position A, but we now need Dr. Daniel Zetterstrom from Cardiff University, who is an expert in this, to come out. Dan, we need you for 2 weeks out in location A in Texas. And you're like, oh, well, I'm kind of working. And yeah, okay, so what we're going to do is cover your expenses. We're going to pay your flights and accommodation. Of course, we'll put you up in a nice hotel and we're going to compensate you for your time too. That money needs to be there already. So you'd have to be in profit to make sure you've got a bank of money sitting available. And then if you want to progress as you get good data, good analysis. So again, I've got no issue with that. I think, and you raised this already, where people have issues, right or wrong, it's all opinion. If they're just making sensational claims for the sake of making sensational claims to make money, then that's an issue. And we'll get to the content in a second. But it's something we talked about with Skinwalker Ranch and others have before, that Skinwalker Ranch is beholden partly to a TV company who tell them, we need, for this season, you've got 16 episodes to fill, or 10 episodes, or 12 episodes. So they need content to fill that time. There's an element of pressure that comes with that. Whereas independently, with private backing, which they have, they don't have that pressure. It's there already. They've got sources, they've got funds, they've got money. And they, like you say, quite rightly, is a really good point. They can do a 20-minute episode. They can do a two-hour episode. It doesn't matter to them. They can stick it on YouTube. They could turn on the advertising. That's fine. I've noticed they've left the comments disabled. I'm all for kind of open it and let people chat. I also get why they might also be a little bit like, can't be bothered with the trolls and the RCs and stuff. But that comes with the territory.
But what is it Cobell says? Praise and blame, it's all the same.
Yeah. Yeah, totally right. Like, it's like
the job doesn't change no matter what someone's saying in the YouTube comments.
No, exactly. And that's not a open invitation to leave a dickhead YouTube comment, folks.
No, do it. Yeah, direct it.
Yeah. And if you're going to name names, it was a good piece. I thought Barbara and Pines speak really well. Genuinely, before Skywatcher Part 2, I've got a good feeling about the organization, what they want to do, what they're trying to do. That can obviously go off the rails at any time, but I'm genuinely feeling quite upbeat about what's to come. Dan, is that where are you with just before we get to part two?
Yeah, I liked that interview. I thought it was good. Matthew Pines is kind of the new advisor, spokesman. I thought they kind of hedged their claims there, getting away from anecdotes, talking about the importance of science. I think that's really good. And then they followed that up only a few days later by actually releasing the framework, which is like a 50-plus page document. I think it was 54 pages, just detailing every single step they were going to go through, even with some examples of kind of like, okay, well, say we found a UAP that was real, this is what would happen. And they even went as far to say, and kind of speaks to, you know, in the last episode, I said, you know, Skywatcher has a finite kind of shelf life. You know, there's a very definitive claim they're trying to make, and you can't drag that out forever.
I think they literally say in the episode as well, they say this is not something we can do forever or don't want to do forever.
When I saw it, I was like, did they listen to us? I don't know, maybe they listened, but it's a good point. And to bring it up, because people just are scared they're just going to be dragged out, kind of same the vibe that people get from watching Skinwalker Ranch, where they're like, oh, just dig the whole thing up. And we're in season six now, and we're still kind of, you know, tiptoeing, it feels like. But they literally say in this document, by following the framework six levels, we will either validate or definitively rule out these techniques, reaching a conclusive determination by the end of 2025. And I'm like, yeah, cool. You're going to take a year to do it. You've got my attention. You're not asking me for a penny. All you're asking is for me to just watch what you're doing. Yeah, cool. That's less than other people have asked me for in this subject.
There's an element, I can see some professional folks getting a little bit irked or rubbed up the wrong way. And I get it, but I'll speak on it. There's a lot of praise being given to Skywatcher and what they're doing as if it's the first time this has been done. But others are doing similar or have done, and Gary Nolan addresses this as well. Others have done bits of this. Or again, the Tedesco brothers, I think, are doing a great job independently doing what they do. it reminded me a little bit, Dan, that Samsung for years would do things first, and then Apple as the bigger company would come along and perfect it and do it better, a lot of folks would say. You can disagree and agree with that. Is that an element of what we may have going on here? That is that whole thing. What's that quote about, if I have seen as far as I have, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants or whatever.
Yeah,
and
spot on.
It's almost like they have come along on the back of all these other people setting up the way to do this stuff. These guys, with their involvement in what they've been doing, are well placed to go, right, a lot of this stuff's in place. They've got the framework, and we're now going to go and do what other people have tried in bits and pieces, but we have a bit of an advantage because of location, because of background, because of training, because of experience. So just to use the Tedescos, who I think are great and I enjoy having them on the podcast, they'll be back on at some point again. John and Jerry Tedesco have a great piece of equipment, are doing a lot of hard work. Neither of them have flown a helicopter picking UFOs up as part of covert black operations, right? If you've got people who have been doing this stuff and have experiences with these entities and whatnot, and then can go and do that, that it just gives you a heads up, doesn't it? Because of that first-hand experience.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Yeah, 100%. It's the difference between, you know, having your own journey and having a journey that other people can follow and be convinced by. You know, I have been all over and, you know, seen lights and, you know, various things that I'm completely convinced there's something out there. But there's so much of that that's not tangible, that I can't show people, you know, those experiences. Yeah. Whereas Skywatcher are dedicated to being a public-facing organization. And like you say, they got the experience, the equipment, the backing, and the financial backing as well. And this organization would not be possible without people like, you know, Stephen Gray, if he was doing his thing, and Richard Dolan doing his thing, and Lou doing what he did, and Gary kind of coming out of the shadows a few years back. All of that has to happen for them to be able to even pitch this idea to investors to get the backing to actually do this and get out there and buy the equipment. So all of those were, you know, baby steps towards something that is public facing. And now we're seeing the public facing thing. You know, this is at the very least what people have been demanding of someone like Stephen Greer for years and years, like a proper scientific peer reviewed study of CE5.
So first thing this morning, Dan, I woke up and checked my phone to see what the general consensus was with the Skywatcher Part 2 video dropping last night. And the first thing I saw on Twitter/X was a video of the jellyfish. And I'm deliberately telling you what I saw immediately this morning before then obviously watching the full content. Thoughts this morning were, this is what people were worried about. It was going to be grainy footage, poor quality. It would be balloons and unidentifiable objects, but in the worst possible way. So initially I was like, oh God. However, I very quickly jumped onto the podcast Discord chat. Folks can obviously get a free trial of the podcast via Patreon and get access to that, Dan, just a cheap plug. People were pretty upbeat in there, and that can be a very pessimistic bunch. So I was like, ah, quite a positive reaction. I'm going to leave looking at any more, and I'm going to go away and look at it myself and watch the proper video, which I got to do later on. Did you see anything before you watched the video this morning? Or I don't know when you watched it.
So I watched it about an hour and a half ago. And what I saw before I watched it, I went to Reddit just to see what was, you know, I always find the people over there, someone will like stabilize the footage or just clip out the bit. And I was like, hey, I want to see that. So I avoided X, I went to Reddit, and I saw that someone had stabilized the footage. That goes to a tech, no, sorry. In fact, I can't even remember the guy's name. Someone stabilized the footage and had like, on one side, it was the footage from the show. then on in the corner, it was like zoomed in 320% and stabilized so you could see exactly what you were looking at. And my initial impressions were pretty much the same as yours, actually. I was just like, oh, man, you know, they said they didn't want to look like fools. And here's something that looks really balloony to me. Not saying it is, but, you know, that's what it looks at first glance. And then the Tic Tac as well, you know, that little bit of footage of it kind of moving down. I was like, you can't make anything out. You know, the claim was that it was coming from 80,000 feet. There's nothing on screen to tell me that it's being dropping from 80,000 feet, no radar. So I was like, okay, I'll put it aside until I can watch the whole thing. And yeah, then like hour and a half ago, I got to watch the whole thing.
Important to note, folks, as often we try and do, I haven't discussed a single part of this yet with Dan, whether via text. Before we hit record, this is literally the first time we are talking through this and sharing opinions on it. Started off, we get introduced to James Fowler, who runs the technology team, and we find out he's been putting together a UAP data repository over the last couple of years, Dan. I got the feeling as we go through this that a lot of this has been in motion for some time, and maybe that goes back to what we said earlier, that things seem to have happened really quickly. I think when you look at these things in isolation, Jake Barber became public in January 2025. He then set up Skywatcher, and here we are with episode 2.
Yeah, that's fast.
Been going on for a while in the background, and we know Jake Barber was speaking background politically as well to figures in Washington and whatnot. So I was happy to hear that there was folks involved in a lot of this. I don't think, and I don't know if that's just me, we have a kind of rough date or timestamp of when episode 2 was filmed or when they put it together. Do we get any idea of that?
No, not as far as I saw. Just that it was after episode 1, which I guess was around January. Before now. And I did notice as well that during the episode, they're not using those new terms that we mentioned, you know, electromechanical signaling and neuromeditative interaction. They were just saying psionic and dog
whistle.
Which
made me think this was maybe a few months ago.
Yes.
And now it's been, but again, it's high production quality. It's good. It looks good, really slick. So perhaps they've needed the time to put that together. Not that needs to take a long time, but I also understand why they may want to do that.
But I guess even if it was like a recent thing they filmed, they're just used to saying certain things, you know, this kind of piece. They don't say like the Tetra, the Tic Tac, the Blob. They just say a class 1, a class 2, a class 3. They clearly have a vocabulary between them that's kind of set up already.
Yeah. If you don't have it yet, Dan, have you got the class types all listed?
I do, yes.
Yeah, brilliant. Cool. We'll get to that in a second. They set up that they've got machine calling and psionic calling. I thought there's a very military look to everything on this, including the way they dress, the way they behave, the way they speak. It sets itself apart from TV shows like A Skinwalker Ranch or others. I think that's a good thing, that this looks serious. This looks different. It is, you know, these guys have military backgrounds. I think I'd be more concerned if they came across like they were TV presenters and it was all like polished. We don't get huge shots of long sprawling experiments and whatnot. It was quite quick, and at 26 minutes, as someone, Dan, you know, who doesn't, I like long form content in some ways, but in others, when I'm in a rush to do stuff, I like short and snappy. 26 minutes, I was like, mwah, God bless you people, 26 minutes. And it's a really easy watch, I think, in terms of bang, 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 bang. It's stuff coming at you. Did you get that as well? Were you quite surprised with just the short time frame?
Yeah, it felt 26 minutes, but it felt like it flew by. Felt like it was like a 10-minute video. Even, you know, going back and forth, making notes, I don't think I paused it once. I was just like watching and, you know, almost had to like try and keep up with how much they were saying, as opposed to, you know, with Skinwalker, you'd be fast forwarding through the recaps that happen every ad break and stuff like that. So I totally love the format of what they're doing.
Where did you watch it? Just at home?
Yeah.
I was in a cafe of a garden center while my dog was getting his haircut. So peek behind the curtain. But to that, I was a
did
little
Did you show
worried.
Anyone?
Literally, it was very early morning. So it was like, but I say that not just to tell you where I was, but it was you know, like surroundings and setting, and you're in like this cafe and I'm sitting with like a bottle of water, and it flew by. It was like, before I knew it, it was done. And it was great because the dog groomer messaged me saying, you know, within 40 minutes, bang, you, the dog's good. So I was quite pleased with that. And like you, I literally sat on my phone making the notes as I watched it at the same time. And I didn't have to pause and keep going back and going back. So that was really good. They mentioned that they get 3 to 5 different class of UAP each day when turning on the dog whistle. They had mentioned in the reality check episode, they were going to be talking about this aspect of it here. Episode 3 will go into the neuro-linguistic fucking Power Ranger shit, whatever, it's psionic stuff. I've got that in my head now. And that's right. So here's a lot. Again, I'm going to go all over the place here, Dan. You feel free to do the same. You know, Jake Barber said a few times about kindergarten terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple. Stop changing stuff. Do you know what? Psionics is fine. We get it. Psychically calling, psychically phoning UFOs, right? Whatever you want. Keep it simple. Keep it kindergarten, as he says. Some of the other language isn't kindergarten. And I get, maybe for some highfalutin investors and whatnot, neuro, intuitive, meditative summoning or whatever might sound more fancy, but just call it what it is. We're still talking about UFOs, aliens, and psychic abilities here. So yeah, you don't need to like say much else. So for me, I was like, just keep the terminology simple. Don't overthink it. Don't confuse it. Don't look at some comments online and be like we are doing now, and go, oh, well, actually we should change it because some people said this. No, if that's what you're going with, we understand what you're doing. One, you have a machine you turn on, it does something, it calls these things. Two, you have people who psychically can use mind powers to summon UFOs. Really boiling it down to the bare brass, that's what's happening. That's fine. Leave it there. But they say they get 3 to 5 different class of UAP turning up each day. The class types, Dan, have you got the 9 there?
I do, yeah. So class types, they run through them. So class 1 is tetra. That's a tetrahedron-shaped UAP, which tumbles on multiple axes whilst is on a stable flight path, often appears in groups of 3 to 20 plus. It's black with intermittent white vapor bursts. Then you have class 2, which is the tic-tac. We all know that really well, so I don't think I need to go into depth on that. It's just a white cylinder, basically. Moves real fast. Then you have class 3, that's a blob. That's an orb-shaped UAP that exhibits pulsing internal light, and erratic point-to-point movement, capable of extreme speed and rapid flare-driven expansion. They're observed one at a time. Tic-tacs also kind of show up more than one at a time on occasion, apparently. Then we have the beam, that's class 4. The beam is basically what we refer to shorthand as the orb, just an orb of light hovers in place, often seen in pairs. Then class 5, we have the manta ray, called such because it looks like a manta ray. It's a manta ray-shaped UAP that tumbles on multiple axes, rarely seen, but it's observed in proximity to tic-tacs, apparently. It's black and emits colored vapor or light from multiple points, including pink, green, teal, and translucent white hues. Then we have what they call the bright star. That's class 6, which basically is a crystal in the sky. That's how they kind of sum it up in the episode. Then we have class 7, which is the jellyfish, a jellyfish-shaped UAP with a seeking head motion and trailing tentacles. That's about two meters head, 3 to 5 meters of tentacles, so fairly large. Then we have something that's called a hornet, that's class 8. They describe that as a dual body UAP with hanging tendrils and asynchronous rotation. Almost kind of better described as a jellyfish holding something beneath it.
Yeah, like, I thought
that's
so.
How it kind of looks. Could be a similar, you know, they might change these classes going forward, I guess. And then class 9 is just egg. Off-white egg-shaped UAP, provisional class designation, because they just don't have much data on it. They say they have enough data to show that it exists, but don't have enough data to concisely describe it. And in the show, as they're going through these classes, they're showing video footage of each of these things. So yeah, what did you think of the video footage? Should we go through them?
Yes. So,
The first one was Tetra. That's where we saw a kind of what they called a flock of them.
Can I mention something else first on the footage? And it's the overall quality of the footage.
Sure.
It's sort of what I expected. And that's not in an oh, look at me type way. Just like, I didn't think it would be great quality. They did kind of set this up. But I appreciate this is one of the angles that skeptics, debunkers, doubters are immediately going to go for. I seen some people comment online that, well, why didn't you just put a balloon up into the sky with cameras and film the stuff? It's like, that sounds really convoluted. And I imagine far more difficult to do than you're making out, as if, well, stick a GoPro on a balloon and send it up and film.
I don't think. Yeah, you can't direct which way the GoPro's looking. Like, maybe have David Blaine hold the balloon, but then you got to pay David Blaine. And, you know.
And we'll get to how they kind of try and intercept these things later. But so I get that. With that quality issue, some of the shapes and classifications at face value, I don't think are necessarily needed or warranted because, and Dan, I think you mentioned this to me about pixelation and things like that and artifacts being created because of the low quality. What I am pinning my hopes on, though, going forward, and they do mention, is they have corroborating data from different sensor systems, which is ruling out, and this goes back to my initial thoughts, rules out any of these objects being balloons.
Which, I mean, I've got a note here where someone in this episode said, given the behavior and these objects, we're confident these don't align with conventional technology. And I've just got italicized in bold. Like, why? Show us. Like, that's what I want to see. I think it's a fair question, and it gets rid of that low-hanging fruit that skeptics like, you know, I've already seen McWest say they're balloons. And you know what? They might be, but they seem to have tried to do work to get rid of that possibility. So before I declare that, you know, the manta ray, for example, to me just looked like a star balloon kind of tumbling over and over, I wanted to see what they did to get rid of these possibilities, because they certainly didn't share it, you know?
So again, this is where I think hopefully the context was set and our initial ideas and opinions help bring in kind of where we are. If they have a device which summons these things, that's a big deal, because I very much doubt they could be in a location, Dan, that just happens to be near a place that lets off a lot of balloons. Now, if I'm going down the balloon route,
want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Is that likely that they just happen to see lots of balloons in this area? That's quite odd in itself, isn't it? That just where we are, shitloads of balloons fly overhead. Is that normal? Like, if you went out today, if I said to you, Dan, I want you to go out and look at the sky, how long do you think it would take you to film a balloon flying past?
Quite a long time.
It'd be months.
Like, yeah, it could be months. But again, it depends on the location. You know, like, it could be just kind of grabbing possibilities out of the air.
Need a balloon factory.
You know, near a balloon factory, near some houses, like on the edge of the range that were having a birthday party or something like that. But that's where you'd expect over time to see that, you know, it wasn't keeping up. Like, oh, that was a one-time event. So that was probably something anomalous, as in like...
And we don't have all that information yet, the metadata.
Exactly.
That's why I was saying how long it filmed over.
Yes. So things like that, they really help people kind of get their head around stuff. So a lot of my questions for me kind of come from stuff like this, where it's like, I want to know, you know, at one point they say, oh yeah, you know, the psionic said something was going to happen. Then 3-4 days later, this happened. And I was like, well, is it a prediction if it took 3-4 days to happen? Like, what is the time scale electromechanical device?
We turn it on and something showing 6 weeks up later, to say, it's like,
yeah. And then they're like, oh, it's a success. And it's like, well, is it? Like, shouldn't you have like a 1 hour time scale or something like that? And then you can kind of rank these things on a chart and say, they showed up then, you know?
Because that's your really like problem. have you not, in the last week or so, a lot of folks, and this happens all the time, who are going like, there's going to be some big disclosure news in the next couple of weeks. People who say that, and it's like, they can just jump or latch on to anything that comes out.
Yeah.
And there's been loads of people in different areas of the field that have done that, okay? It's really, really easy to do because you're not predicting anything. You're just hedging your bets. So, but if they are saying they turn this stuff on and within, realistically, what are you thinking? I'm thinking they turn this on and half an hour for me would be a fair time frame.
Yeah, I'd say half hour, because with a half hour, you could kind of go, oh yeah, it might be up there, but we didn't see it and it's just been around. You know, the sky's big. I totally understand the struggle of capturing something if it's far away and you can't see it with your eyes. So I think a half hour is fair.
And it could even be like, okay, I've got a little note to speculate what this dog whistle is. I'm guessing it's something that sends out some kind of frequency. And do you have anything on that?
So the only thing I have is that, so during the reality check thing, when they mentioned Arrow, I went to the Arrow report. Because I remember them mentioning like frequencies, and the Arrow report suggested that a typically reported UAP characteristic was that they would be able to pick up signaling between 1 to 3 gigahertz and 8 to 12 gigahertz. So it could be that Skywatch's kind of technique is derived from that piece of information. 1 to 3 is going to be a general kind of thing. It could be, you know, 1.6, and they just said, you know, 1 to 3. But I would assume that it's derived from kind of emitting a frequency like that, that they found them to emit, i.e., you know, pouring up a flare for specific things.
Yeah. So that's what I'm landing on at the minute. They turn this on, it sets out a signal. I don't know how any of this stuff may work. And you know, if you get like a bowl of water and you drop a single drop of food dye into the water, without any change, you'll slowly see it move down and spread out. But if you get a spoon and mix it, perhaps, or some kind of process they have to do where they can send up the signal, but then they have to do something which then fills the sky. This then covers a big enough area that these things then come into. You can't just point a laser torch up in the sky and be like, bang, there you go, come into reality. Or, because that's another note I've got for maybe later, Dan, as to what these things are, right? Because I think there's a conversation there that we don't have saucers as one of these objects. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But we'll get to that. I won't jump too far ahead, okay? Gary Nolan pops up, Dan. Really good to see him involved. And he has stated plenty of times that if he sees they aren't doing anything right or morally right in this, then he will walk away from any association or support. I think that's a good thing that a guy like that's involved. And I imagine there are others who don't necessarily want, with a military alignment, that sort of interaction going on where it's negative. And I know people have brought up the machine gun, for example. I've got a few people mention that. Why yeah. do you have it? And Jake Barber kind of addressed that to say that, you know, we're not bringing a knife to a gunfight. That's for a different type of protection. I don't believe they're looking to shoot any of these things. But maybe it sounds to me like if there were adversarial drones technologies involved, there is more protection for them from other stuff. I don't believe they're going full Will Smith punching an alien or slapping Kevin Hart.
Yeah, I would agree. With the Gary thing, it was nice to see him in this video, but throughout it, I didn't see him again, you know, nope. on the range with them. So I really want to know how much he's involved, because they use Gary to kind of suggest that he brings an air of legitimacy to this in how they're approaching the science, but then he's not in the rest of the episode and he's not there with them on a day-to-day basis.
Can I tell you why I think that is?
Yeah.
I think they filmed that when they done the initial part one stuff where he is involved and he spent a couple of days with them, which he's talked about. I think he talked about that with me. He spent a few days, and other folks, not just me, but he spent a few days with them, and then all the other stuff's been going on. So they've then taken that from then to say, here we go. That would make sense to me. I might be wrong, but again, we've got no concept of, this could have been filmed 5 years ago. Look, we don't know.
Yeah, it could have been. But that Gary thing for me is kind of a sticking point, because they really do use his kind of scientific credentials. And I've seen people do it online, you know, why would Gary be involved with this if it's XYZ? So, well, how involved is it with it? Is he, you know, is he just advising on the framework? and hoping for the best, and what he's seen is good enough for him to say, yeah, you know, I'll stand by them while they do this work? Or is it that he was just there for a day and gave them some ideas and then went off and he's back to his life now because he's a busy dude? So I'd like to know advising a little bit more.
I think we don't know, do we? But I think his advice, it sounds to me like he's advising, he's in the background, that they can contact him. Like you say, he's an incredibly busy guy. He can't be out there. He's got you know, he's got a partner, he's got his dogs. He's got an incredibly busy job and lifestyle, and it's hectic and he's all over the place. So I imagine it's more, they can call him, they can get advice. He's given them probably some really good indications and direction of how to go about this as well. He's probably a really good sounding board, and perhaps it's more of a step back now, but he's there with involvement. But I think Gary Nolan's also probably a wonderful canary in the coal mine for them. And not for them, but for us, that if and when we see Gary take a step back from it or say I'm no longer working with them, perhaps that's a red flag that something's not quite right. He's
seen, that's kind of what happened with To The Stars, wasn't it? Because Gary was involved with them initially and then he left, and like not everyone kind of tapped out of it, but I've seen a lot of people bring up that point. Well, you know, if Gary kind of walked out of it and they're talking about these materials, then it doesn't speak too highly of their methods.
No, so maybe that's a one to keep an eye on in future, where people who have a lot of respect, I know I certainly do, Dan, for a Dr. Gary Nolan, a lot of folks online do, I believe you do, that he's a great indicator, isn't he, of if he comes away, then unless they make a statement around why and he confirms that, it may be a bit of a, but while he's there, I think that's a good thing. Marek von Rennenkamp, journalist for The Hill and other outlets, he is involved in interviewing James Fowler, who we meet earlier. I like this James Fowler guy because he says, I'm no believer, I'm no ufologist, I don't believe in off-planet things. Very skeptical.
Did you notice though, he says, not spiritual, emotional, it's not about belief. And then the next sentence out of his mouth is, we have what we believe is compelling data on UAP. We believe we're able to dog whistle the UAPs to our location. And I was like, it's kind of a contradiction. Like, I'm not going to go out for it. But I was like, I thought we were getting away from this.
But you're also not dealing with skilled presenters and auditors who, it's just normal people speaking in that sense. And that's where maybe you don't have people who are careful enough with their words.
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to go online and pick holes at him. I was just like, that tickled me.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, though. He mentions there are three buckets, essentially, that they want to put this stuff into, kind of homemade US-friendly technologies, I believe is the first one, China.
Yeah, USB bucket.
Yeah, like red bucket.
Yeah, blue bucket is the US one, friendlies.
China, second one. And then the third of, we don't know. And I think that's a great way to frame this early on as well, because you're not going, the third one's alien UFOs, interdimensional beings that we're trying to attract. No, it's we don't know, but it's the stuff we're interested in a little bit. And that can be used in different ways. I think that's where something, for example, like the early Arrow reports or the way Sean Kirkpatrick would talk about the subject would be, 95% of stuff was identified, or we could make a good guess. Yeah, but what about the 5% bucket? And it was almost dismissed. What they can do is go, we don't care about the blue bucket. We don't care about the red bucket. The US may. We can give them that information. But this smaller bucket over here is what really interests us. And that's what we are talking about. That's what people listening and watching this are hoping to find out. So I like that. He mentions about following the data, which is something that I like when I hear people say. It was something Lou Elizondo used to say right back at the beginning as well. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to an organization. Look at the data and look at what results are producing. That's where you have to give your focus and attention. And I think that's what a lot of skeptics, quite rightly, will want to hear. And so should staunch ufologists. No matter how entrenched you are in this topic, you should want to hear people saying stuff like that. We don't know, but we're going to try and work it out and do the work. That is the ideal for me.
There's almost like a weird thing, isn't there, in the UFO community where scientists don't want to come study it because of the stigma, but at the same time, when they do, they get attacked for their ideas because they'll propose ideas that people don't agree with. So it's a really like almost violent relationship between science and UFOs when we really need science to kind of dive into this. I just wanted to touch on that US-made bucket and China-made bucket stuff, because they did speak in Reality Check about coming across classified technologies. Mm. And I saw a lot of people talk about, oh, you know, TR-3B and, you know, the US flying saucers and stuff like that. And yeah, sure, could be. But at the same time, it could well just be, you know, testing new aircraft and stuff like that. When it comes to the China-made bucket, I thought this was a good shout. Tectonics on X pointed out, he says, I believe what they're capturing are CCP China balloons and dirigibles drifting across the continental US via jet streams. So kind of like the Chinese balloon that was shot down a few years back, that these are low-cost things that are released on the regular with plausible deniability. So some of them could be that kind of stuff. And this is where I would like to see more information about how they deem what these things are. Because I expect there's probably intelligence that goes into saying, oh, that's from China. You know, just after that shoot down, we learned that they'd been tracking that for months across the US. And it was only because some rando filmed it that it kind of got kicked up in the media and stuff like that. So I imagine they have intel kind of saying, you know, you're going to be seeing stuff come across your range. But maybe they don't at the same time. So that's something that I'd like for them to answer.
And then, this time, Dan, I just mentioned, in this time of political upheaval, most buckets in the US are probably made in China anyway. So
that's good. I like that.
Yeah, thanks.
The one thing I do like about what they're doing as well is that, amongst other things, is that they're trying to falsify their hypothesis, which is something you have to do in you know, scientific approaches. You've got to try and prove that what you're doing is something that you can cause in a way that disproves what you initially thought. So with the dog whistle, that comes down to basically, you know, turn the dog whistle on, see UAP, and then study the skies in the same way when there's no dog whistle, or you use different frequencies from the dog whistle. And what they're seeing is no UAP if they do that. So I like that they're doing that. I'd like to see a little bit more data. That's where you get kind of, you know, your science paper, your peer review. And again, go back to that question that we said, you know, what are the time frames from when you turn on that dog whistle to when things are showing up? Can we see all the frequency graphs on that?
Yeah, 100% with you on that. I think there are some data points missing at the moment that I'm sure they will get to, because there are things there that would really help clear up some gaps. And I'm sure, I would hope, they are looking at the reaction to this. They're looking through, and as much as they've turned off the online comments on YouTube, they are aware enough to see what people are looking for, what they're saying about it. And if they seem to really want that support of the public and, you know, folks into the UFO topic, then look at what people are asking for. I'm not saying give them everything, but at least answer some of these questions. And I think they've got platforms now to do that. There's nothing stopping. Do you know what? I'd love Jake Barber, Fred Baker, Matt Pines to come on podcasts like this and others and answer these questions. They perhaps want to do that in a more controlled way just now. Perhaps they'll go on with Ross Coulthart on Reality Check, or they'll put out some Q&As. They can do that just now as quick as they want, which would be really, really useful and really handy. But it's early days, and I get why they've not done that perhaps just yet, but they can answer that stuff. And if they don't, and the longer that goes on, what happens is it just has a look about it.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we jumped on, so at the end, I guess, I'm trying to kind of pepper them throughout, but I basically tweeted at them, or posted, what do they call it now, X'd, sent them some questions. And I was nice in my posts and stuff like that. And I think you're absolutely right.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
They can respond to these questions. So drop the animosity if you're talking to them. Ask the questions in an honest way, because I want everyone to see the answers to the questions that I'm asking. And it's great that you were asking the same stuff. So there's going to be more people out there asking the same stuff. And it should inform what they're going to do in the next episode. And maybe they can touch on these things and give us those data points. And hopefully there's a nice kind of relationship between people asking questions in a friendly and productive manner and the content that they're putting out.
Yeah, nothing to stop them sitting on in a room if they're still together or over a Zoom session or whatever it may be, and just have like a Maddick or I'll volunteer for it, or an Alex Clocus who hosted this, sit down and say, Jake and Fred, Dawn, whoever's involved, we're going to go through some questions from the community and can you just answer these for us? They can pre-screen them. They could just go through them randomly and just go, here's some stuff people want to know. And I think that stuff like that really helps. I think the big takeaway from this episode though, Dan, and there's still plenty to go through, is the jellyfish stuff for me, because there's a real focus on this.
Yes.
Jellyfish, I had to double check the stats, are made up of 95% water. Is there a genuine opportunity or chance we are seeing organic things in our sky that are actual entities or living things that we perhaps don't know about yet, similar that we could find under the ocean? Because a jellyfish is ridiculous. Something that is 95% water being a thing which is so sensitive but is made up of the other, it's like muscles, nerves and tissue. So could there be something that literally can stay up in the air that we don't really know about yet?
Yeah. This was the subject of, well, not the entire subject, but it's something that someone named Ivan Sanderson touched on in some books that he wrote back in the 60s. He was a zoologist, and he approached the UFO subject in his books purely from, could these things be creatures? And he noted that a lot of the five observables that we talk about being impossible for technology that we make are actually really common in nature. You know, you look at that kind of fast movement from a standing star and the way that things move in really erratic ways, and you compare that to like a fly or something like that. The move in those kind of ways, and we don't kind of lose our minds about that. So he also goes into kind of mystery blobs that have washed up on the shore or fallen from the sky throughout history, and comes up with a whole bunch of them and suggests that, you know, could these things be life forms from space that get sucked into a gravity well and they kind of get stuck here. And then they're just kind of in our atmosphere, and that's why they're rare. I think it's a compelling idea. And yeah, just weird shit exists out there. So weird shit does exist out there. So why can't more weird shit exist out there? You know, it's not that crazy an idea, even though what we're talking about is considered kind of fringe. It's odd. You know, you say about the 95%, you know, water content in a jellyfish. You and I are like 50 to 70% water. And it's just weird to think about when you kind of focus on that aspect of it. But like I say, like, life is goddamn weird. So why can't life continue to be weird?
Here's a list, Dan. Emperor penguin, great crested grebe, kingfisher, pelagic cormorant, Aninga, puffins, brown pelican, long-tailed duck, and cormorants. What do they all have in common?
They're all birds, right?
Yep.
Is that what you were looking for? Or?
No, they are transmedium. Because they can also go underwater as well as beyond the land and fly as well. So
you're transmedium.
You see that in nature, don't you, as well?
Everyone listening to this is transmedium.
Yeah, in a way. You can be. So some people do better than others with that. But size of these things you mentioned earlier, Dan, between 5 and 7 meters when you include the 2 meter dome top, the tentacles. This is something I think could be the new, what was it last year, the year before? We had like a new phrase or a new thing that everyone was looking at. And I can't remember what the big one was that everyone went after for the year. But I think the jellyfish thing could be something that people really latch onto this year, and we get more data on. Here's one that made me raise my eyebrow. And again, none of this is in a bad way, because again, Dan, I'm very optimistic about Skywatcher for multiple reasons. They do mention they believe types of these objects are interacting with each other. They mention that a class 7, which is the jellyfish, is potentially aggressive in the way it behaves or can interact. And that type 2, which is a Tic Tac, and type 5, which is the manta ray, can position themselves between them and the jellyfish to almost help protect. They don't know it's speculation. I found that an odd call out. It is on the fringe of, well, it is sensational, but I was like, do you have, again, it's going to go back to a repetitive thing here, Dan, of have you got some data you can show us around that? We don't have that yet.
Yeah, 100%. I had that in my notes too. They make some claims about some of these things, like their radar being jammed by one of these objects, that I was like, how did you determine that? How did you figure out that it was that jamming your radar? How did you figure out that the jellyfish is in between you and the Tic Tac for protection? Like, there seems to be a level of kind of anthropomorphization going on, where they're putting kind of human characteristics onto objects that may or may not have them. And I'd just like to hear a lot more about that kind of stuff.
These are a well-trained, intelligent group of people. So we don't just have randoms out there saying this stuff. So for me, it's either they're very, very misunderstood, which is a worry, they're completely lying, or they have data to back this up. And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They have data to back this stuff up as well. What would help along with that? They do have some cool animations, which I liked. The Manta Ray 3D render, very similar to a very famous video, Dan. You know, the one online where the pilots and the aircraft filming in the sky and the object flies past. That's got that Manta Ray look to it. I imagine it's a similar object.
The Roswell craft was also reported by some to be Manta Ray shaped.
I'm not having that, Dan. No, thank you. Oh, saucer for me. And we still need to go back to that saucer thing. Remind me if I don't bring it up.
Sure.
What would help, though, I think, were some additional graphs. And this calls out you like to go look at the stabilization stuff, right? When they mention the Tic Tac falling from the sky, fine. They mentioned the tumbling movements. That was described even during the 2004 event, wasn't it? Where the object looked like it had been placed inside a glass, like a ping pong ball, and was tumbling above the water, even though it was on the spot.
Alex Dietrich described it as like if you were to drop your mobile phone, you're acting the phone, it just bounces around. Yeah. Like, it's really erratic.
Yeah. So that ties in. The size of it, 40 feet, ties in with what's been reported previously. But like you say, you can't tell it's tumbling out the sky because we have a blue sky, the Tic Tac looking object in the sky, and you can't discern movement and stuff from that. Again, I'm presuming they have sensor data. They have, you know, the naked eye could see that. We can't. So they're presenting something to us still at this moment, perhaps some kind of animation along with the data to say, here is what it would have looked like. You know, for example, the gimbal video, people have done the animations to show how it actually travels. Because if you're just watching the video, it looks like the object is there and it's just moving along on its side. Actually, it flies in a loop and you can't see that unless someone animates it for you so you understand what you're looking at.
I did read that they were wrong, though, with that, because it's more about like how the thing's flying around the object. Even though it is moving, it kind of overemphasized kind of how much it was moving. But yeah, to your point, spot on. Like, you need to kind of set the story a bit more. And, you know, for me, when you're seeing that Tic Tac drop down, I need to see the radar reading and, you know, the height reducing on the object. And the camera operator also, like, trying his damnedest to, like, keep this thing in shot. So you need cameras watching the people controlling the cameras and also cameras watching the instrumentation.
You need that, and you're better than me with a lot of that kind of stuff as well, looking at the actual technical stuff. And then there are people who are multiple levels above you who are really qualified to read this stuff professionally. You need to really bring it into a public level where you can show it to someone like me and be like, this is what this actually means. This is what it's like. So the general public, are people flicking through TikTok or X or Instagram, can catch a 30-second video and go, oh, that's really cool. Because otherwise, you're just showing them a point in the sky. They need something to go along with it. Half and half screen, where this is what's actually happening. This is what you're looking at.
We had it with the stuff we filmed in Colombia. You know, when you show I showed the people a video of what we actually filmed, they're just like, yeah, it's blobs of light on a screen. But as soon as you give them context of, well, we were here, the mountain's that far away, it's a sheer cliff face. And then you kind of set the context for the clip. then it becomes impressive. So you kind of, you need to show all of that so that people can understand it a bit more.
Yeah. Conversely, I had someone I work with sent me a video from South Africa a few weeks ago, and they were like, really cool video, UFO, how weird is this? I'm filming it right now from my balcony. And I was like, what, right now? And they're like, yeah, I literally just filmed it. It's dark outside. And I was like, I'm obviously not there. I was like, is there a hill in the background by any chance? And he's like, no, I don't think so. I've just got to my hotel tonight. Next morning, wakes up. Oh, yeah, it was a hill and it was lights from houses on the hill. Sure. And I was like, cool. But I like to think, folks, that's me at least being like, you know, I could have got that video, posted it online, but I was quite confident it looked like just a light on a hill. But he was like, no, it's just dark outside. It's just hovering there. It's been there for ages. And I'm like, okay. Next morning, he goes, it was the lights from those houses. So it's really easy to post that stuff online and invite a few hundred people along to view it with you and celebrate seeing it. No digs at anyone.
Something to highlight here, I think, is that someone in the show said that they have no data from night. All the data is daytime. And they literally say there are no lights in the sky at night, where you kind of need to squint to see what you want to see. Next to that, I've written, because, you know, the video footage they showed us, you kind of have to squint to see what you want to see. At the same time, I get what he's saying. Interesting that it's daytime stuff. That they're out there in daytime doing it. Really interesting. And they go on to say that they've had over 300 sorties, which is just an observation of UAP, you know, when they observe it, of their UAP classes. So there's a lot of data that we're not seeing. Potentially not all of them are filmed, but you know, in this episode, we saw nine little video clips, if that. So there's a lot more data there. And apparently that's going to go on their website at skywatcher.ai. And you can kind of go into all the different classifications of UAP, and there are placeholders at the moment for essentially where you'll be able to see like a full analytic report on that class. Radio frequency data, radar tracking and signature data, infrared sensor data, and electro-optical captures, which is just videos and photos.
And they're coming out in the next few weeks. They say that we're going to release modules on each one over the coming weeks, so people should definitely look out for that.
Yeah, which is great.
You mentioned the radar jamming stuff, right? Totally with you on that. You know, how did you know it was jamming the radar, etc.? Was it just it malfunctioned or was it working? And you're saying, oh, it must be that, which that can happen. But again, more interestingly for me, they talked about the helicopter. They sent up a pilot to try and intercept, was it a Tic Tac? And the helicopter, they said, literally stopped moving, was stuck in place, couldn't go up, down, left, right, and had to come back down, which would be pretty interesting to see. We don't know. Wouldn't see that.
The most we get is a clip from inside the helicopter kind of showing it. And again, I'm not trained to read those panels, so I don't know what I'm looking at. But the only thing I noticed from the clip is when you look out the window, you can see that the helicopter's making progress over land. So I was like, is that just like a trick of the eye? Like, what's going on there? So that's on my question list. Like, can you release more on this?
Need to explain. But again, there's a thing here, though, and I think for both of us, a positive way, we need more data on XYZ, which is fair.
Yes.
Why don't we see saucers on this, Dan? Here's an aside. So that seems to be a glaring omission in the history of ufology on this list. Why aren't saucers appearing?
Saucers just jellyfish with their tentacles pulled in. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Like, for me, it just made me think, though, like, it's a different species. Is the saucer stuff coming from other planets? And
I mean,
this stuff is the interdimensional aspect of whatever this may be.
I say, as if I know.
Yeah.
But fair point. You know, we've heard time and time again that this, what we call the phenomena, you know, the UFO phenomena, is made up of many, many different things. It's not one thing.
Yeah.
So these could be little BCs that are being attracted by certain kind of things, you know, just like you could probably set up
a bug light. You know, when you turn on a bug light and the flies come in and...
Yep. Or keep mosquitoes away. You know, you can have like these little high-pitched things that keep mosquitoes away. or the mosquito device that keeps teenagers away. There's that.
This podcast really good for that. So during the night, if people have a mosquito problem, play this podcast really quietly. Let the adverts play on the free feeds. And it'll keep mosquitoes away, I promise. Yeah,
you should definitely like just put that inaudible sound going through the whole podcast.
In the background, there's an annoying noise. Good.
It's a unique selling point.
But even like the Nimitz event, you know, some of these famous military events where there's an active presence of this phenomenon, it's not saucers.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Yeah, so they don't seem to have an interest, which is intriguing.
Yeah, it many possibilities. Could be that whoever's making sources now makes Tic Tacs. We could talk about Jack Vallée's kind of hypothesis that whatever it is responding to what we expect to see, and now we're expecting more Tic Tacs, so people are seeing more Tic Tacs and less sources. Many different possibilities, but spot on to highlight it.
And they mentioned the point Skywatcher is a live operation. You know, it's an ongoing experience, event, experiment, whatever you want to call it. We should get regular updates because Jake Barber, to be fair to him, is very active on social media. Lester Nari is doing the website for them as well. He's really active talking about what's coming on there, which is great. I would hope to hear and see more of these folks coming forward who are involved and giving us a bit more of that information as we go on. The modules are coming out over the next few weeks. It looks like on our YouTube channel and via the website that you mentioned before, Dan. And they've said again, part 3 is about psionics, the team involved and their experience. So we move from what appears to be the mechanical way, the grounded nuts and literal nuts and bolts, it sounds like, way of attracting these things, to that woo, the other side of the UFO phenomenon, where people are using their minds and they're psychically connecting, however it may be, neuromeditative interaction,
that's it.
But there's an issue though. That's both of us can't remember that again, and we're talking about it on the episode.
Yeah, it's a marketing thing, right? As mundane as it sounds, you need people
psionics
to remember these things.
Cool, remember that immediately. Yeah. One word, really simple, bang. And I'm all about the simple. So that was. Anything else from part 2 for you, Dan? That was kind of the end of my notes on it.
So they say that the psionic assets predicted that certain objects would show and then they would show up. Interesting, but again, brings up those questions of how are they noting their predictions? Are the psionics always making predictions? And that was just one of 5,000 they gave out in a day that was correct. I want to know more nitty gritty on that. They also said that the psionics are out there day and night as well. So I'd love to hear more about, like, are they on shifts? Are they all out all the time? Like, do they fall asleep at all? If you are doing it in the night, how come all your footage is daytime footage? It might just be that they don't find the night stuff compelling. But I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. And they're things that I've kind of put to Skywatcher in, you know, my questions that I've asked them to.
Just before we get to listener questions, there's a couple of other news bits I'd like to go through, then we'll go through listener questions and thoughts. Overall thoughts for you then, Dan, on what they've produced and where they're at, Skywatcher as an organization?
Interesting. I continue to be curious about their efforts. I'm not fully on board in a belief way yet, but I think they're going down the right path, talking about science, holding that up as their kind of North Star and kind of doing things on their own terms as well.
Yeah, I'm stuck in the same place of I'm optimistic. I think there's some really interesting stuff here. Ross Coulthart said in the reality check piece that, you know, do you realize that this is like one of, if not the biggest discovery in our history? If you guys can pull this off, what you're claiming. And Jake Barber tries to say, look, yeah, we're trying not to look at it that way. You know, that can put a lot of pressure on things, but has to acknowledge, well, it is. you know, this isn't a small thing you're going after. And I don't think it should take much to see the mainstream really latch onto it if they can produce something pretty incredible or sensational, which, given what they're doing, they should do at some point. I'll be wary if in 6 months' time we're still in this same place, Dan, where we're getting some videos and grainy videos and we're summoning these things and we've recategorized. And for me, I think I'd be seeing an issue that really, I think by September, October, I'm really hoping to see some stuff that we can go, wow. And for me, in the UFO topic right now, modern day, and I mean from 2017, because there was a real fork in the road there, 2017 article, 2023 David Grush, 2025, we could be looking at Skywatcher being that third point on the map of this is where things really kicked up a notch.
Yeah, but potentially. I just wanted to kind of say that the Skywatcher as a group, you know, their psionic stuff and their electromechanical stuff is currently at level 1 and 3, which is structured data collection and analysis and hypothesis testing. So I am totally with you. If that's still where they are in 6 months' time, then questions need to be asked about their efforts. We need to see independent verification now and peer review. You know, they need to put their papers out. They need to let people kind of test this on their own terms. It sounds like, you know, with 300 sorties, that they're kind of at the point where they're confident in what they're saying. So, yeah, I'm eager for them to move into that independent verification and peer review. Here's a question for you. If they tomorrow said, this is what the dog whistle is, and you can buy it from Amazon for $10, it's a cheap pair of equipment, and you can go do it, would you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you'd be like cautious about like summoning things or...
You know, like, I'm not into Ouija boards and stuff like that.
Sure.
No, bin that, get that in the bin. I know you're the opposite. I don't like all that kind of stuff.
I was, but... until Scared In. But yeah.
Well, yeah, so you had your stuff.
Terrify myself.
But for this, I'd be tempted, yeah. Not on my own. Like, I wouldn't go to a field in the middle of the night myself and be like, okay. But middle of the day, plenty of people around. See what happens, yeah.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing.
I do think
happen,
they need to try and solve the problem, though, of getting better equipment up higher to try and see this stuff, or getting some really good... I saw someone post a thing on X where it was, we can't get good pictures of UAP, utter nonsense, and they've got like a camera on the ground and you can see the point of light in the sky, and they take a really great couple of shots of like a commercial aircraft flying at what must be 30, 40,000 feet.
Sure.
And it's a beautiful picture, sunny day, and I'm like, surely you can do this. Maybe... Again, this goes back to a conversation we had a few weeks ago. Is there an element of they're deliberately holding stuff back because this is the public presentation, and some of those folks in the background that they're trying to get to come out and disclose, who can do the proper capital D disclosure, controlled disclosure, they're giving them the chance to go, look, we're setting this stuff out. We can make some of this stuff appear. You know, we can make this stuff appear. You know, when your kid pushes it and you're like, don't do it, don't do it, and they keep edging forward and eventually, like, sure, they knock the glass off the bench.
And they get a cat, but yeah.
Yeah, do you know, I had like... a cat in my head as well, to be honest, yeah. But the cat's just nudging the glass and it's like, don't. And they are the cat going, we're going to do it. You can come and stop me. We're giving you the invitation, until the point comes they go, okay, fine, bang, smashed. And that's that catastrophic disclosure. People have all kind of...
Oh, that feels like a pun now, because we were just talking about cats.
Catastrophic, yeah. And nobody would meant that. Genius as well. I could take it out and just say I did. but yeah, so optimistic, hoping for quick, rapid-fire updates. I did like seeing the Discord chat being so reasonably impressed with this. Even some of the more skeptical folks in there were like, oh, pretty interesting, actually. One of the listeners, Tim, messaged me earlier saying the same thing. He asked me for an update and I said, actually go watch it yourself first. He was about to get on a flight. I was like, honestly, 26 minutes, I would like to know your genuine thoughts. And even he said, I'll just quote Tim here, actually, really quickly, really professional, getting my message out. Honestly, I think it's cool. I do not think it's bollocks per se. And I like that non-committal. I don't think it's bollocks per se.
Yeah, so, that's a good scale. Cool to bollocks.
Yeah, cool to bollocks. Not bollocks per se is, I think, just you're going back and forward in the middle. They have a lot of room. I like the phrase low-hanging fruits whenever I'm working on something. Even in my professional life, there's this idea that if you start a new job or you get a promotion, what are some quick wins you can get? Low-hanging fruit, the stuff you can get too easily. I think Skywatcher has a lot of low-hanging fruit that will not damage their reputation, that would only enhance it, that will not damage the national security side of things, that will not damage a lot of what they're trying to do long-term, but will go a long way to getting them a lot of support and answering the questions people like you, people like me, people that listen to this have, Dan. And I'd like to see them get to that sooner than later.
Agreed.
That is all for part one. Part two will be out in the next couple of days. You can listen to this episode already in full, ad-free, and with no sponsors for less than the price of a coffee. If you head on over to Patreon or Apple, you can subscribe to the podcast for less than the price of a coffee or take up the 2 weeks free trial that are available on those platforms. You can head on over to Spotify and search That UFO Podcast Premium and get access to this episode in full, no adverts, no sponsorships, and also with some extra bonus content as well. Thanks for listening, folks.